Okay. Morning, everyone. Today's daf in Yevamos daf Chav. I'm sorry, Kuf Chav. Okay. Apparently, I didn't get enough sleep last night. We are just a short couple days away from finishing the Masechta. We're in the last and 16th perek of the Masechta. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of Daf Daf. We'll be learning the Zecher Nishmas Liba Gabriel Bas Shmuel. Also thank Stu for filling in for me yesterday, starting the new perek, getting us to the two dots on Kuf Yutes Amud Beis. A big daf, big start to the last perek yesterday. Classic discussion yesterday between Chazak and Rov. What happens when the two battle off? If you have a Chazak against a Rov, the Gemara went over yesterday. The rule is Ruba Adif. Rov is better than Chazak. You're going to see that throughout Chas. You saw that in yesterday's daf, that a Rov beats a Chazak. And then also yesterday we delved into the position of Rav Meir. Rav Meir's choshen lamiyuta. He's worried about a minority position. And we discussed that in the context of Rov and Chazaka. Okay, that was the beginning of the perek, and that was the beginning of the discussion. If you remember the Mishnah dealt with the following scenario. A woman's husband went away together with a co-wife. Okay, so husband went on a business trip, and this time he decided to take, you know, one of the wives as opposed to the other wife. Okay? I cannot imagine how these things actually work in terms of being married to more than one woman, but okay. So the so he went away with one of the wives, and they came back, not they, meaning, but other people came back and reported that that the husband died. So what's the problem? The problem is that we don't know what happened over the course of the time that they are away. Did her co-wife have a child? Did her co-wife not have a child? Okay, right, that was a big part of yesterday's discussion. So what did the Mishnah say? The Mishnah said that she can't, meaning the wife who was left home, so she can't remarry, and she can't do Yibam. Okay. So she can't remarry, she can't do Yibam. Now she can't do Yibam, so there she can't do Yibam because, as we mentioned yesterday's daf, we're concerned that maybe the other wife had a baby in the interim that they were away, and so therefore there's no longer a Zika, so okay, so you can't do the mitzvah of Yibam, right? If there's no mitzvah of Yibam, it's an Isra Yishasach, it's an Isra Erva. Okay. So, but the Mishnah also says that she can't marry another man. Gemara says, what's that? She can't marry another man? That's very hard to imagine. The Gemara asked them very succinctly in one word. The Gemara says, Ula Olam, right? Starting with the Gemara now in Kuf Yutes Amud Beis. And the Gemara says, really? She can never marry another man? And as Rashi points out over here, Rashi said it back in the Mishnah, Rashi says it here as well. Meaning, what should be the solution? The solution should be that she has a surviving brother-in-law that's here. So the surviving brother-in-law would do chalitza to her. And do chalitza with her and good. And now, look, let's go over the possibilities. Either, number one, there was a Zika. Zika was taken care of by the brother-in-law, did chalitza. Or there was no Zika. And if there was no Zika, so she was materis from the beginning. So the Gemara says, I cannot understand. What's the problem? Just let her do chalitza and that be and that be the end of it. So Ziri's solution is very simple. Ziri says, okay, look. If it was just her, and the only issue was her, and establishing paternity, she'd have to wait 3 months. Okay, there's a chalitza in question, so she has to wait 9 months. Why do you have to wait 9 months for a chalitza, as Rashi points out over here? Because we learned, it takes us all the way back in the Masechta, back to the fourth perek of Yevamos. We know that a pregnant woman cannot do chalitza. Okay, and there's a machlokas, Rav Yochanan Reish Lakish back then, whether or not it works, it doesn't work, but lechatchila, a pregnant woman cannot do chalitza. So, in the event that her co-wife was pregnant, so here's what we'll do. We'll wait 9 months. Okay, and then what's going to happen? Either nothing, meaning, again, the co-wife went away together with her husband. We don't know what happened. So, if after 9 months she had a baby, mazel tov, and double mazel tov. Because number one, her co-wife had a baby, and now with the baby, there's no longer a Zika, she's allowed to marry. And let's say she was just pregnant. Well, if she was just pregnant, but let's say Rechman son, the baby didn't come out, but she was pregnant during those 9 months. So fine, so during those 9 months, chalitza can be done. But after 9 months, either way, either there was a baby and there's no need for chalitza, or there was no baby and now chalitza can be done without any issue whatsoever. So Ziri says, all the Mishnah means is that you can't do chalitza immediately. You're going to have to wait 9 months. That's how Ziri understands our Mishnah. Okay. By the way, that's not the simple pshat in the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, lo sinase. Usually, if I were to ask you what does that mean, you would say, she can't get married. But Ziri says, okay, but chalitza would solve the problem. That's what the Mishnah meant. She can't get married in the immediate future. She can get married after 9 months. Second suggestion of the Gemara, Rabbi Chanina Omer, so Rabbi Chanina says, no. You know what the pshat in the Mishnah is? The simple pshat, which is that she, if it's just up to her in establishing paternity, she has to wait 3 months. But it's not just up to her. Meaning there is a co-wife that went together, that went away together with her husband. And we don't know if there was a baby, there was no baby. And again, she can't do Yibam because there may have been a baby. And therefore there's no longer a Zika. She can't marry anybody else because there may be a Zika. What about doing Chalitza? We'll get to that question in just a moment. But Rabbi Chanina says, so her fate is going to be, unfortunately, that she can never remarry. To which the Gemara says, that's some fate. V'tachlos mima nafshach. Gemara says, I don't understand. Let's do chalitza. Chalitza will solve the problem. Let's wait 9 months, and then let's do chalitza, like Ze'iri said. So why is Rabbi Chanina saying that she can never get married again? Abai bar Avin, Rabbi Chanina bar Avin, Amrita, Vayu Gzeira. Gemara says, fantastic pshat in the Gemara. Gemara says, Gzeira, it's a rabbinic decree. Shema Yehi Vlad ben Kayama, because let's consider that maybe the child that her co-wife had while she was away on with her husband is a ben Kayama. It was a viable child. Meaning, here's the story. Story will be that her co-wife did in fact have a baby. And it was a viable baby. And there was really no need for Yibam, and there was no need for Chalitza. Now, yes, it's true, they did Chalitza, but it was unnecessary. And so what's going to happen now is that the world is going to have to we're going to have to report to the world that even though Chalitza was done with her, but the Chalitza is unnecessary. So the Gemara says, I'm sorry, Matricha Kruz LeKahuna. Okay, so that's the problem. Problem is that we're going to have to announce to the world that she had a chalitza that was done, but it was unnecessary, and she could still marry a kohen. So the Gemara says, okay, v'litzricha. So Gemara says, so, okay, if that's what we need to do, so that's what we need to do. What's the issue? So the Gemara should sound familiar because we heard the Gemara make this argument before. Gemara says, here's the problem. Problem is that there was a group gathered around for the chalitza. So they saw the chalitza, the announcement, and they put it in the weekly. Let's say they even put it 2 weeks in a row. That doesn't mean everyone heard it. So it could be now that for some people out there, they know that a chalitza was done, and then a year or two later, they see her married to a kohen, and people are going to be like, that's interesting, I didn't know that. I thought a chalitza couldn't marry a kohen. Apparently I'm wrong. Apparently a chalitza can marry a kohen. They were there at the chalitza, they weren't there for the achrazah, and therefore the misperception of the Torah is going to result. Now, mind you, by the way, I'm just summarizing what the Gemara just said. It is a little bit challenging to understand. Meaning, basically, because for fear of the perception that a chalitza is allowed to marry a kohen, even though in this case she didn't need the chalitza, because we discovered that her co-wife in fact had a baby, she didn't need the chalitza, but for fear of the perception that a chalitza can marry a kohen, so this woman's fate is that she cannot marry anybody forever. And just to make the, just, I'm always interested in understanding the Gemara. I'm not interested in creating more problems. But a chalutza to a kohen is an issa d'rabbanan. It's not an issa d'araisa. So the chachamim made a gzera in this case, all because of a misperception of not an issa Torah, an issa d'rabbanan.
There's a solution, though. Very simple solution. During the chalitza, they could make the announcement. It's a chalitza, but. But maybe it's not. No, but the same people.
I hear
it. No, you said some people will hear some.
I know. I like your suggestion. I do like it. The Gemara doesn't mention it. Meaning the Gemara, if the Gemara would have.
Why did I not see it?
I understand.
Some people would hear it secondhand.
Yeah. If the Gemara, I hear you. If the Gemara thought that was the Gemara, for sure would have said it. Had the Gemara thought it was a solution, okay. Oh, look, all I'm saying is. It's gzeira, that's the halacha, that's how the Rambam paskins. It's challenging. It's difficult to understand how the chachamim would make such a strong gzeira. I understood that, and also what we're ultimately talking about is the chalutza to a kohen, which is in a siddur rabbanan. Okay. She could marry somebody in a kohen again. She for sure could. The problem is that if she, again, the Chachamim do not want to create a misperception of what a chalutza can and cannot do. Okay, again, all well understood. The Gemara says that that's When the starting point for the whole discussion is we have to say pshat in the Mishnah,
right?
Right? That's whenever we learn Gemara, that's the starting point. The pshat in the Mishnah says she can't get married.
That's right.
That's what the Mishnah says. Why can't she get married? So okay, so Gemara is now saying pshat. Tanan, we learned in the Mishnah. Neatly, ben b'medina sayam. This goes back to a Mishnah that we started just a couple days ago, where she went overseas with her husband. And then she comes back. And here's the story that she tells. She says that, you know, while we were away, I had a son. And then she says that my son died, and then afterwards my husband died. So basically, when all said and done, meaning she told the story, and we believe her, but when all said and done, nothing changed. When she went away, she didn't have a child. She had a Zika. In other words, she was a kukali avam. Her husband's not dead yet, I understand, but in the state that she's in right now, she's a kukali avam. Then she goes away, then she comes back, and basically, after all said and done, what is she saying? Okay, I got to go to my yavam. Good. But let's say she went away and she didn't have a child. She comes back and she then now reports. Here's my story. We went away with my husband. I had a child. And first my husband died and then my child died. So now what she's arguing is, I know while going away, the chazaka was, I have to go to my yavam. But now I'm reporting that, A, my husband's dead, and B, I don't have to go to my yavam because there was a child who I had, and even though the child's not here right now, but I'm telling you there was a child, and the child died after the death of my husband. So the Gemara says, hey, no, 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 no. I'm sorry, it's the Mishnah. The Mishnah says that she's not believed. So the Gemara says, but, well, she's not believed. On the other hand, we're going to do chalitza. Okay, but not yibum. Meaning, we don't believe her, but at the same time, she is saying that there's no Zika. If she's saying there's no Zika, we're not going to let the brother-in-law do the mitzvah of Yibum if she's saying there's no Zika. So therefore, chalitza not Yibum. So the Gemara says, so the Gemara is bothered by a very simple question. So remember the gzera that we just learned. The gzera is that when chalitza is done, and chalitza was not necessary. And we learned that chalitza was not necessary. So now it results in a problem where we're going to have to make a declaration, we're going to have to put it in the weekly, that she didn't need the chalitza, but now, not everyone's going to know about the achraza. Somebody will know about the chalitza, not know about the achraza. See, you're married to a kohen, and walk away thinking, hey, a chalitza can marry a kohen. Who knew? So the Gemara says, I'm Rav Papa Begrusha. So Rav Papa says that Mishnah is talking about a very specific case. That Mishnah is describing where she was previously divorced. Because she was previously divorced, she already was prohibited to a kohen. So in that particular case, the Chachamim did not make gzera, because her being a chalutza is not going to change her status whatsoever. That is one way to understand that Mishnah. Okay. Which puts a serious limitation on that Mishnah. In other words, the din of the Mishnah is only in the case where the woman in question was already a divorcee. Rav Chia b'Reid, Rav Huna Amar b'Amra Anivahu Nichbu'u b'Ma'ara. Or the Gemara says, another possibility of that case is where she makes she gives testimony and she says that me, together with my son, together with my husband, all were in a cave. So and nobody else was with us, meaning she's basically assuring that there's not going to be any type of contradictory testimony. No one's going to discover the son. And so the Gemara says, under those circumstances, so the Chachamim didn't make such a gzera. Okay. Okay, and that takes us to the end of the first Mishnah of the 16th parak. Here we go now, beginning the second Mishnah of the 16th parak. Now, Shtei Yevamos, we're talking about two sister-in-laws. Sister-in-laws meaning that the two of them are married to two brothers. They themselves are not sisters, okay, but they're married to two brothers, and so therefore they are looking at a possible Yibum situation if one of the brothers die. Shtei Yevamos, Zuhomers, Meis Bali, Vizuhomers, Meis Bali. Okay, so each one of the sister-in-laws coming back from a trip with their husbands, so each one of them report, you know, my husband died. And the other one said, my husband died. Okay. Now, here's the problem. Okay, so far everything's straightforward. Everything's pretty, pretty simple. The Gemara in a moment is just the Mishnah, I should say, in a moment is going to discuss whether there are any surviving brothers. Right now, in the current case of the Mishnah, the first case, there are three cases altogether in this Mishnah. In this first case of the Mishnah, we are going to be discussing a scenario where that's it. It's just them and their brothers, and they're coming back and they're reporting that their husbands are dead. Here becomes the problem. Well, let me read the Mishnah and then I'll explain why the Mishnah says what it says. The Mishnah says, Zu asura mimnei ba'ala shel zu, v'zu asura mimnei ba'ala shel zu. Each one of them becomes prohibited. Neither of them can remarry. Okay. What?
We don't believe in the
Iri. Yeah.
They died.
So, what is the problem? So Rashi explains, the problem goes like this. Take a look at the second Rashi in the Mishnah, Zu Asura, Lashuk bimnei ba'al ha-shozu, Shehu yivama, Deshem ha-chayhu uzekukalo, Ve'af api she'ishto omeres meis, Eina ne'emanis ayivimta. Here becomes the problem. We have two sister-in-laws. They are both coming back. They are both reporting that their husbands are dead. Now, if we just look at one of the sister-in-laws, and look at it from her perspective. What is she saying? She's saying my husband's dead. In of itself, that's fine. Meaning, as we started off in the previous parak, by learning that a woman has full ability to testify about the death of her husband. Again, you need peace in between her and her husband. You need peace in the world. But assuming that you have that, she's believed. She has credibility. So in terms of her testifying about the death of her husband, that's perfectly legitimate. That's fine. However, what's going to now happen is that by declaring that her husband's dead and she has a sister-in-law, what she essentially is doing is not only she's testifying about herself, but she's also testifying about her sister-in-law as well. Rashi writes, "V'afa pisha ishto ameres meis ena nemenes yevimta shetina say apia she'ein yevama meida al chaverta." In other words, we know that a sister-in-law cannot testify about the about her sister-in-law's husband. For the reason we explained earlier, Rashi says she achas mechamesh nashim she namos laida. They're one of the five women that can't testify. Remember, we learned in the previous parak. Five women that have a national animosity towards one another, and one of those five women is one sister-in-law to another sister-in-law. And if you remember, why? Why does a sister-in-law have a natural animosity to another sister-in-law? Because of the possibility, the potential that they're going to end up becoming co-wives. Because all I need to do is have either her husband die or my husband die, and we're going to be stuck together as co-wives. And so because of the potential co-wife possibility, so therefore they already, in the current state of being sister-in-laws, have a natural animosity to one another.
Even here, when they both died, you don't have a potential. You don't have that, you know, since each one of them says that they're dead.
Right, if you're looking correct, if you're looking at the totality. But right now, the way the Mishnah sets it up,
I understand,
but the way the Mishnah sets it up is that each one is reporting about the death of their husband. So again, if you just looked at it from that standpoint, that would be fine. But what they're also saying now is that my sister-in-law is no longer right. No, my sister-in-law now has lost her yavam. So from that perspective, now they're not going to be believed. Okay, so now they are stuck. In other words, they are still in other words, each one of them have lost a husband, but still retained a yavam. Who, by the way, is not going to come back. I know. This Mishnah is a real brain teaser. In other words, they're believed about the death of their husband. Problem is, they're not believed about the death of their yavam.
Baba Shuddin?
Yes.
In the case of the two tzarot, we never said this. You know, when they came to the Beit Din, one testified, we believe. The other testified, we believe.
No. Correct. If they both testify, so then fine. But if one testifies, the other one isn't going to get permitted. Here, again, each one's testifying about their own husband. And vis-a-vis their own husbands, they're perfectly believed. The problem is that they're believed vis-a-vis themselves, but vis-a-vis their sister-in-law, they're not believed.
But the issue with the testimony was that they said that you could report one's testimony about the other one's husband, not about the other one's yama.
Okay, so what we're saying now is you can't testify about somebody else's. I mean, that's what the Mishnah is saying it very clearly over here. A woman cannot testify about the death of her husband vis-a-vis somebody else's yavam.
A woman testifying is only good for her and nothing else.
That's it. That's it. And so therefore, for the other sister-in-law, again, she's saying her husband's dead, that's fine. But what she cannot say is that my yavam is dead. How do I know my yavam's dead? Because my sister-in-law said so? That doesn't help. So it's an unbelievable strange situation. But the Mishnah says, as a result of that, so that neither of them can now remarry. They're both going to have to wait for Yavam, who's not going to return. So lezu edim v'lezu ein edim. Then we're in case number two. Case number two now, as Rashi explains, we're going to go back to the original setting where I have the both sister-in-laws reporting, But in this second scenario, I have both sister-in-laws reporting. One's not only reporting, but also bringing edus, bringing testimony. And I know the Mishnah says edim in the plural, but like we've said time and again, when it comes to edus isha, you don't need two, one's sufficient. The Mishnah over here is saying edim, but let's not take it super literally. Either way, one of the wives is coming back with corroboration. Okay. Eshi yeshla edim asura, the eshe'inla edim muteres. Please follow this under life isn't always fair. Okay, and it isn't. Okay, it's good to know that. But the Kadosh Baruch Hu has a plan. Just from our perspective, it doesn't always look like there's it's equitable. But the woman who came back with Adus, she can't remarry. Why? Because from her perspective, her husband's dead. Okay, and by the way, she didn't even need the Adim to say that her husband's dead. She's saying her husband's dead. Fine, her husband's dead. Now, what about her? Now, okay, let her move on with her life. No, she's got a yavam. She's got a brother-in-law. And right now, where is the yavam? Oh, the sister-in-law said the yavam's dead?
Nope.
We don't. For her, that report is not going to be good. So she can't remarry because although her husband's dead, but she's still got a brother-in-law out there who right now, from her perspective, is not dead. So now let's go to the other sister-in-law. The other sister-in-law, she's great. Meaning, in terms of the death of her own husband, she reported the death of her own husband, she's believed. What about the death of her brother-in-law? She's not relying on the credibility of her sister-in-law. She's rather relying on the credibility of the Aidim. So now her husband's dead because she said so. Her brother-in-law's dead because an Aid says so. Okay, she can now remarry. Okay. Lezu banim v'lezu ein banim. And here we go now in the third case of the Mishnah. In the third case of the Mishnah, we're going to do the same thing. We're going to start off with the two wives coming, the two sister-in-laws coming back reporting the death of their husband. But in this case over here, what we're going to do is introduce the following. And Ben, this is what we were saying earlier, that they're not the only two brothers. There are other brothers as well. Okay. In this case in the Braisa, Mishnah, so there are other brothers as well. And now one of the wives is going to have a Zika and the other wife is not going to have a Zika because one of the wives already has children. So lezu banim v'lezu ein banim. Et sheyesh la banim. So for the woman who has children, perfect. Because her husband's dead because she reported her husband's dead and she has credibility to testify that her husband's dead. So her husband's dead. Her brother-in-law, not an issue. She has children. There's no Zika. So she can go ahead and she can remarry. Now let's go to the sister that does not have children. The sister that doesn't have children, here becomes a problem. The problem is that she's testifying her husband's dead, fine, her husband's dead, she said so. But now she's got a brother-in-law. And how do we know that her brother-in-law is dead? Because her sister-in-law said that her brother-in-law is dead. For her, that's no good, that's not good testimony. So now, for the woman without children, she can't remarry. So, eshi yesh la banim uteres, eshi yesh la banim masura. Okay. Nis Yavmu, okay, and now the Mishnah goes on to report. Let's say Yibum was done, meaning that there are other brothers who are there to perform the mitzvah of Yibum. And these women do the mitzvah of Yibum. Again, the two sister-in-laws are coming back from a trip, each one of them reporting that their husband's dead. Fine. Now, in terms of the death of their own husband, both of them are believed. In terms of the death of their brother-in-law, the sister-in-laws cannot report for their respective sister-in-law that their brother-in-law is dead. Fine. So there may be a brother-in-law out there. Okay. Yes or no, we don't know. And probably no. But in other words, from their perspective, they don't know. But there are other surviving brothers. Perfect. The other surviving brothers can do the mitzvah of Yibum, meaning because again, from each woman's perspective, we for sure believe each woman that their husband's dead. So they can come back and they could do the mitzvah of Yibum. Nis Yavmu. So let's say both of these women do Yibum. Umesu ha-yavamim. And then the brothers die. Asuros lihinase. They can't marry. Why? Because even though their testimony allowed them to marry the surviving brother and to perform the mitzvah of Yibum, but now that the brother's dead, so now what are they looking at? They're looking at, let us now go free. Let us now marry somebody else. Remember, it all started, this whole story evolved from the fact that they reported that their husband's dead, which they have full credibility, and in terms of the death of their brother-in-law, that only was built on a testimony given by a sister-in-law, which from her perspective has no credibility. So now, even though she did the mitzvah of Yibam, and she married one of the surviving brothers, but now that he's dead, can she marry? Is she Muteres Lashuk? Can she go marry someone else on the marketplace? No, because she still has a Zika with the with the brother-in-law that was reported dead by her sister-in-law.
Right.
Okay. Rabbi Lazar Omer, hol v'huchu li'yavam v'huchu l'chol adam. And Rabbi Lazar says, no. Once you give her permit to remarry, now granted that first permit that was given was to remarry a brother-in-law to do the mitzvah of Yibum, but once you're giving her license to remarry, you're essentially acquiescing to the idea that her husband's dead, which we already established, and her brother-in-law is dead as well. And so once you're giving her permit to remarry, so now if her husband dies, she can go and marry whomever she wants.
The brother-in-law being dead or alive has no impact because she already did she did Yibum with other brother-in-law. So
that's
really no.
That's what Rav Elazar is arguing. Rav Elazar is arguing that now that she's remarried, so basically we are consigning to the fact, resigning. We are agreeing to the fact that her husband's dead, which she says, and her brother-in-law is dead as well. Hold up. We'll get to Rav Elazar in just a moment. Tana, the Gemara over here just quotes the Braisa, and the Braisa over here are very straightforward. Lazu edim uvanim, lazu lo edim v'lo banim. Shem uteres. The Braisa just is constructing a scenario where they are both going to be able to remarry. Again, the wives are coming back and they're saying the husbands are dead. Now, what about the fact that a sister-in-law cannot testify for their sister-in-law? In this case, in the Braisa, it's not a problem. Because one of the sister-in-laws is coming back with corroboration and with children. Check and check for both of them. In other words, the fact that they come back with corroboration and edus, so that means now that she's not saying that her husband's dead. Really, it's the edim that are saying that the husband's dead. Vis-a-vis her sister-in-law, that makes her sister-in-law's case excellent. Her sister-in-law says that her husband died, which she's believed. What about the fact that she's got a brother-in-law? Good. Brother-in-law's dead, reported by edim. Good. Now, from her standpoint, meaning we're going to go back to the original sister-in-law who had edim and had banim, she's also in a perfect situation because she's saying that her husband's dead. She also has children, which means she has no zika to her brother-in-law. She cannot remarry. So really, all the Braisa did, it just didn't teach us anything new. But what the Braisa did is just gave us a scenario where now they can both remarry. Now, Nisyavmu Umesu Ayivamim Asurli Nasir Rabbi Lazar Omer Hovehuchu Liyivamim Huchu L'Chol Adam. The Gemara quotes the opinion of Rabbi Lazar in our Mishnah. Again, the Tanakhama says, even after they did Yibum and their brother and their new husbands die, they're still stuck. They're still Asura to marry anyone they want because, again, there's still a brother-in-law out there who, from each woman's perspective, is not dead. May be alive, because their sister-in-law does not have credibility towards the sister-in-law. Now, Rav Elazar says it's not a problem. Why does Rav Elazar say it's not a problem? That's the Gemara's question. That's what we're going to respond to. The Gemara says, "By Rav Amaitam and Rav Elazar." What's behind the opinion of Rav Elazar? Mishum de kasavet sara meid al chaverta. Is it because co-wives are allowed to testify on behalf of each other? Now, let's pause over here at the Gemara, and let's just think about this for a moment. The Gemara is saying that according to Rav Elazar, co-wives are allowed to testify for each other. Tosfos says, what? That's not true. Tosfos says, go back to the daf that we saw 3 days ago. Tamalari, Tosfos, last Tosfos on the Amud. Amaylo Palag Rav Elazar B'idach Berka. And this is the first time we're hearing about Rav Elazar, the Tan Rav Elazar. And why is this the first time we're hearing about this? So Gabe Akol Neman Amalem Chutz Mechamosa V'kachashet Sarah V'yavimta. Earlier we learned that a co-wife and sister-in-law cannot testify on behalf of one another. And Rav Elazar didn't say anything in the previous parak about this. And why is this now the first time we're hearing that Rav Elazar says, oh, don't worry, co-wives, and by the way, when it says co-wives over here, it means potential co-wives. But why is this the first time we're hearing about Rebbe Lazar? Venir Lari, Tosu suggests, the lo dami de la el. What we're going to do is we're going to make a distinction between Rebbe Lazar of what we're learning right now versus the previous parak. Shavada Shatsaro Yavama Bala Haira Khaverta in La Lios Naman Safila Rabalazar. Look, if all the co-wife or the sister-in-law is doing is just testifying on behalf of her co-wife or on behalf of her sister-in-law, forget about it. There's animosity, there's no credibility, they hate each other, and be done with it. Avahacha, but over here, kol achas inam iskavna leira chaverta, ela al atzma. But over here, says Tosfos, look, we're not talking about that their primary function of testifying is about their sister-in-law. They're primarily testifying about themselves. Each one is coming back and saying, my husband died. It has ramifications to her sister-in-law. But the primary reason why they're testifying is because of themselves. So what Rebbe Lazar is arguing, says Tosfos, is in this case, where the primary purpose of their testimony is regarding themselves, in this case specifically, they're given credibility and they're going to be believed vis-a-vis their sister-in-law. Okay, so Tosfos says that's the difference between our discussion over here versus the Mishnah we saw just three short days ago. So by Rava, let's read this again in the Gemara. By Rava, my time of the Rav Laz, Mishnah b'ksav etzara me'igla chaverta, is it because co-wives are allowed to testify about one another? Or maybe no. Maybe over here, what does she need to do? I'm sorry. If we're really questioning her credibility, what she's doing is not only trying to hurt and harm her sister-in-law, but in doing so, she's also hurting and harming herself. Right. What is she saying? She's saying my husband's dead. And now, no, she's not saying she's stuck.
No, but she's
right. She's now going to remarry based on her own testimony.
Right.
And then her husband's going to, and then what? She was lying, and her husband's going to come back, and she herself is going to have to ruin her marriage just to get at her sister-in-law? Gemara says, is that the... maybe that's why Rebbe Lazar, in this case, believes her. So Lamay Naf Kamin, the Gemara says, and the difference would be, so the Gemara says, well, the difference would be, what if her co-wife got married before she did? So the Gemara says, look, if it's just a question of, they're believed, meaning there is credibility. So if there's credibility, it doesn't matter who gets married first. The Gemara says, but if it's a question of, I'm not going to damage myself in light of just so I can get at my sister-in-law, so then she'll testify about the death of her husband, she'll remarry, then and only then is her sister-in-law allowed to remarry. So again, when Rabbi Lazar says it's fine, the question is, why is it fine? Is it just simply because there is credibility? And like we said in Tosfos, Rabbi Lazar in this case allows for sister-in-laws to testify for each other because their principal testimony is not about their sister-in-laws, it's about themselves, and so therefore they have credibility, or no? It's because they won't hurt themselves just to get at their sister-in-law. And the nafka mina would be, do they have to get married in order to allow the sister-in-law to get married as well? My. Tashmar Rav Lazar Mar Hovich Ulivam and Mushlechol Adam. So the Gemara says, because look at the Mishnah. The Mishnah says that if they do Yibam, so then and only then are they allowed to marry somebody else. The Gemara says, so then I understand our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says, in what context does Rav Elazar allow them to remarry? Only if they already got married once before, based on their testimony. What do you see? They're not hurting themselves. And because they're not hurting themselves, so therefore they are not going to be hurting their sister-in-laws as well. I don't understand. Why would Rebbe Lazar need them to marry their Yavam in order to marry somebody else? If Rebbe Lazar just extends credibility to them, period, so then why does the Mishnah have to construct a scenario in which only if they marry their brother-in-law, then and only then can they marry somebody else in the event that their brother-in-law dies? So the Gemara says, so what do you see from our Mishnah? The fact that the Mishnah only, even according to Rebbe Lazar, only allows a woman to marry outside of her family, outside of her brother-in-law, is only because we see that she is saying something to the extent where she herself is going to remarry based on her own testimony, and she's not doing so just to get at her sister-in-law. So the Gemara says, well, maybe the Mishnah is not such a great proof. Rebbe Lazar l'divrei kamar luhu. Lididi, the Gemara says, maybe the dialogue of the Mishnah goes like this. Rav Elazar was not espousing his own opinion. Rav Elazar could be arguing the following. Look, you're asking me. I'm of the belief that, I'm of the opinion that a co-wife can testify, a sister-in-law can testify about another sister-in-law under all circumstances. But according to you, the Chachamim, can you at least agree with me to this extent? Look, in the event that she testifies that her husband's dead, and she's doing the mitzvah of Yibum, which seems to be excellent evidence that she really believes what she's saying, so can you at least agree with me in that scenario that if her brother, if her husband now is dead, she can marry somebody else? Mishum dehi lo mekakla nafsha v'rabbanan, and whether Chachamim going to counter to that? Second time we're seeing this now in the Masechta. Tamun nafshi implishtim hu dekaavda. What are you talking about? Her hatred to her sister-in-law is so strong that even though she knows that her husband's not dead, she's coming back and she's reporting her husband's dead, so that her sister-in-law now will get ruined. She herself is going to get ruined. Okay, if that's what it takes to get at my sister-in-law, I'm ready. I'm tamus nafshim plishtim. Just like Shimshon was ready to commit suicide just so he can get the plishtim, so she herself is going to ruin her life just to get her sister-in-law. Okay. So what basically we're saying is we really don't know what's behind the sheet of Rebbe Lazar. Is it that the sister-in-law just simply have credibility, or no? That only when you see them put into practice what they're saying and they're ready to marry, then and only then do we fully believe them. Tashma, the Gemara said, tries to bring one more proof. Aisha Shalcha, Hiu Bala Lemedina Sayama, Vava Amra Meis Bali, Tina Seve, Titok Sivasa, Vitzarasa Asura. Okay, so we saw this Mishnah earlier. A woman comes back and says that her husband's dead. She's believed that her husband's dead. She can go, she can get remarried, she can even collect her ksuba. What about the co-wife? No, co-wife can't. Rebbe Lazar Omer, ho v'hutrehi, hutre namitzarasa. Rebbe Lazar says that because she's permitted, her co-wife is permitted as well. Okay, understood. Understood. But what do you see from Rav Elazar? That a woman can testify about her co-wife. Ema ho v'hutra v'nises. So the Gemara says, no. Rav Elazar is saying, only if she testifies and she marries, then and only then is the co-wife permitted. But before she actually remarries, the co-wife can't go anywhere. So maybe that's the way to understand the Mishnah or Braisa. V'leichushdoma begita asai v'hadika amra hachila kalkala sarahu mechavna. So the Gemara says, maybe the co-wife, when going away from that trip, maybe unbeknownst to us, she actually got a divorce from her husband. She came back. And she's like, I've been hating my co-wife for years. Here's my plan. I'm going to report that my husband's dead. I'm going to remarry. My allowance to remarry has nothing to do with the death of my husband. In fact, he's not dead. I just simply have a get in my hand. I'm going to remarry. But as far as my unbeknownst to my co-wife, she's going to think that she's a widow. She's going to remarry. The husband's going to come back. Mission accomplished. Gemara says, why not be worried about that? Eden of Lisoach. And the Gemara says, yeah. The Gemara says we're talking about where they were married to a Kohen. Because they were married to a Kohen, Not if they were married to a Kohen. If she remarries a Kohen, so then she doesn't have a get in hand because. And it's funny, like, I don't know why the Gemara puts the line over here, but the Gemara says, here's what she won't do. She won't come back with a get and marry a Kohen just to get back at her wife. To that degree, she won't do. Right? You understand? She'll lie. She'll tell untruths. She'll make up a story that the husband's dead. But she, with a get in her hand, she won't marry a Kohen. If you see her marrying a Kohen, it's because really her husband's actually dead. Gemara says that's where we're going to draw the line of credibility. Okay. Finishing up, we are at the Mishnah Kuf Chof Amud Aleph. Here we go with a very serious discussion, an unbelievably delicate discussion regarding what do you actually have to see in order to testify about the death of a person. Okay, a lot of halakha lamaisa coming out from this Gemara over here, as the Gemara is basically going to say, what do you need to see in order to identify that somebody died? Again, in terms of how many witnesses come back, so as we've been saying now, in the 10th, 15th, and our 16th parak of the Masechta, only one witness needs to report. But what do they need to report? So that's what we're going to be learning about together in our Mishnah. Ein me'idim ela al pirsof panim, im achotam. So the Mishnah starts off by saying you need to see the face. The feature detection, right? Recognition of a human being is done, says the Mishnah, primarily through the face. You need to see the face, and not just the face, the Mishnah says, but the nose. Nose is an incredibly important part of detection and recognition of a human being, and so therefore you need to see the face together with the nose. And the Mishnah says, look, there could be simanim, there could be telltale features that are encountered in the rest of the body. Okay, you know about a particular mole, you know about a freckle, you know about an article of clothing that he's wearing. Simple pshat in the Mishnah is, that's not enough, that's not good. In order to recognize that a person's dead, you need to see the actual face itself. Gemara is going to be bothered by this point in the Mishnah. You know about a mole on a particular area of the body, and you didn't see the face, but you saw the mole, that's not going to be good, right? Or let's talk in modern terminology. Let's see, have a dental record. Dental record is not going to be good, meaning it sounds like from the Mishnah, the only way to recognize somebody is through the face, and no other telltale sign is going to be acceptable. Okay, well, we're going to come back to that part of the Mishnah. The Gemara is going to challenge. Back to the Mishnah. Furthermore, says the Mishnah, dying is not sufficient. Dead, right? Even though the person's dying, and then you left, that's not going to be good testimony. In order to testify the person's dead, what you have to know and have seen is actual post-mortem. You have to see the person expire. And the Mishnah says you could see him in the most precarious situation, and death is imminent. Doesn't matter. It could be, the Mishnah gives three examples. Meguyad, he's chopped up. Tzaluv, he's hanged or crucified. V'chayo chelesbo, or he's being eaten by an animal. If right now he's not dead yet, he's only dying, it's simply not enough. Eme'idim ela ad gimel yamim. Also, decomposition of the human body is very quick. Unfortunately, as a member of the Chevra, so I could tell you stories, I'm not going to, but decomposition is very quick. So the Mishnah says that if you see him 3 days post-mortem, so already decomposition is such that you can't. You can't testify about him if it's 3 days post-mortem. The assumption the Mishnah is making is that it's unrecognizable. Rav Yehuda ben Baba Omer, lo kol adam, lo kol makom, lo kol asho shavim. Rav Yehuda ben Baba says that you cannot put an objective time to decomposition. In other words, season, heat, body. You cannot simply say it's a 72-hour point. And, as Tosos himself points out over here, you can see Tosos inside, very important Tosos. Top Tosos of Kuf Chaf Amin Aleph. We don't have enough time. Please, take a look at Tosos over here where he discusses a lot of the points of recognition of a human body post-mortem. But Tosos says, how are you supposed to know if it's 3 days post-mortem? Mm-hmm. Meaning, you get there. You don't know when the person's dead. Now, if you know, so obviously the Mishnah is telling you that you have 3 days post-mortem to recognize the body. But let's say you don't know. Let's say it's safek. So you can see Tosus, where Tosus has a discussion. He quotes Rabbeinu Tam. Actually, you know, it's interesting. Tosus over here quotes Rabbeinu Tam from his work called Sefer Yasher. You know, Rabbeinu Tam wrote a Sefer, right? It's called Sefer Yasher. Rabbeinu Tam, his name was Yaakov, right? So that's how he got the nickname. Rabbeinu Tam, because Yaakov was Ish Tam Yosef Olam. Also, by the way, Rabbeinu Tam had a brother. There were three brothers. The first was Shmuel, the second one was Yitzchak, and the third one was Yaakov. So we have acronyms to describe each one. The first one is the Rashbam, or Shmuel ben Meir, grandson of Rashi. Second one is the Rivam, Rav Yitzchak ben Meir, and the third one, we can't call him the Rivam because then we just get confused with him and his brother. So we call him Rabbeinu Tam. Okay, that's his nickname. Anyway, so he writes a sefer called Sefer Yashar. We have that sefer to this very day. And in it, he talks about what if it's a suffix, whether it was 3 days. You can see Tosis inside for that discussion as well. Okay. Anyway, a lot of important discussions, which just I'm highlighting where you can find it. Tana Rabbanan. We're starting with the Gemara on the bottom of Kuf Chaf Amud Aleph. Padachas v'lo pirtzuf panim pirtzuf. I'm sorry. Padachas v'lo pirtzuf panim. Pirtzuf panim v'lo padachas. Ein me'inim achiu shneim imachotam. You need to see the forehead, the face, and the nose. If you're missing any one of those three, so then you don't have recognition, and therefore you cannot testify. I'm Rabbi V'tem Rav Kana Maikra Hakaras Paneim Anta Bam. The face is the recognizing feature of a human being. That says Pasuk in Yishayahu. Abba Marmar Tadav Abba Men Yomei Ava Maske Debei Reshkelus Azuzay. Gemara tells a story. Now I know what the Gemara is doing right now. The Gemara is just making a point that the face is the way to recognize somebody, and you cover the face, and nobody knows who you are. Okay, every old movie that we have in our head with the bandit, you know, they put a handkerchief on their face, and that's it. So the So here, it's just a funny story. So he owed money to the Reish Galusa. I see Kira Bebliasa Davik Bapuse. So what does he do? He takes some wax and he basically takes a handkerchief and he sticks the handkerchief to his face and Chalaf Kamayu, and he walks in front of the Reish Galusa Velo Bishakrua. And he went undetected. So in other words, he was passing by his creditor. Oh no, here's my creditor coming. So He covers his face. He walks right by the creditor. Creditor doesn't even know who he is. And okay, we're good. Mission accomplished. It's a funny story the Gemara is telling us. Like, I know what the Gemara is doing. It's just, you know, it's a funny way to do it. He got away from his creditor. Okay, good. Anyway, Alpha Pishyei Shimon V'Chulah Lamemir Shimon Lav Daraisa V'Reminu. Now, here's what bothers Gemara. I foreshadow this point to the Gemara. Here's the problem. The Mishnah says you need to see the face and every feature of the face, the forehead, the rest of the face together with the nose, and if you don't have it, nothing. Even if you have a mole on the body and you know exactly where that person's mole is, and you saw that mole and you came back and you said, you know, on his third toe there was a mole. Well, that's funny. My husband has a mole on the third toe. Okay? And that's what we call in halacha simon. Okay? You lose a document, and you're able to come back and say, you know, on the ninth line in the letter, right, in the third letter, in the ninth line, there's a hole in the letter. That's a simon. That's a telltale sign that that document belongs to you. And in the world above Mitzia, what do we say? You can claim ownership. So, Matzu Kasher, Bekisav Arniki, Vatabaso, Shinimso, Ben Kelav, Afilu, Zman, Meruba, Kasher. So, you find it. Rashi says the discussion over here is where there was a document, there was a get. Get over here doesn't necessarily mean divorce document, just simply means any document. And Rashi over here says it's get Isha, but okay. And it was lost and it was found. And it was found wrapped up it was in a wallet. It was in some sort of sack. Or it was tied up with a ring. Oshinimsu bein kelav, or it was found amongst your clothing. Even if it was a long time kosher, it's a good get. Meaning, that's a good way to identify that this get is actually belongs to you. So, what do you see over here? Simonim are valid. So you find the remains of a human body. Unfortunately, you can't detect the face. But if there's another simon on the rest of the body, so shouldn't that be enough? To which the Gemara says, "I'm Rabbi Lokasha, Rabbi Lazar ben Ma'avaya, Rabbanan." So the Gemara says, "It's a machlokes." The Italian will enter the Mishnah. Me'idim alashumer, Rabbi Lazar ben Ma'avaya, Omer me'idim. So the Gemara says, "It's a machlokes between the Tanakama and Rabbi Lazar ben Ma'avaya." Tanakama says that a mole is not a distinguishing mark on the human body, and Rabbi Lazar ben Ma'avaya says, "Yes, it is." So my law, Akamiflik, the Gemara says, "What's the machlokes?" My stuff is simanim deraisa, or my stuff is simanim derabbanan. So the Gemara says that maybe the machlokes over here is whether or not simanim is a din deraisa or a din derabbanan. I'm Rav to call a simanim deraisa. Gemara says no. Everyone's in full agreement that simanim are a din deraisa, and allows you to reclaim an item that's lost, and allow you to identify a body that is that the face is no longer recognizable. Hacha b'shuma mitzuya ben ben gilo kemifligi. Mar saver shuma mitzuya ben ben gilo. Omar saver eno mitzuya ben ben gilo. The Gemara says we're talking about a ben gilo. A ben gilo is somebody who is born around the same time you're born. Right, Rashi over here writes regarding Ben Gilo, Nolad Beperik Achad of Amazal Achad, you're born under the same constellation. Okay, both of you are Capricorn. I know that doesn't sound like a Jewish idea. It is a Jewish idea. Right, being born under the same mazel. So, the Rav Elazar ben Ma'avai is of the opinion that two people born in the same Ben Gilo do not share a mole, and therefore for Ben Gilos, one can testify by the other. Tanakhama says no. If you're born at same time, same constellation, so therefore it would be you would expect them to also share the same strange features as well. That the Gemara is suggesting is one way to understand the machlokas. Or maybe the Gemara says, no, really, simanim do work. And simanim allow you to claim an item. And a mole on a human body in of itself would be good. The question on the table is, do simanim change post-mortem? In other words, after the death of the body, is it acceptable to argue that maybe the mole once was there, it's no longer there, or maybe there was a mole that was not there, and post-mortem the mole developed. Igadarmi hamarav dekulei amasiman adarabad v'ach b'shuma. Simon Movak Kamiflagi. Marsav is Simon Movak, Marsav lo Simon Movak. Or the Gemara says maybe what the argument is over here is, look, Simonim are in fact valid. And Simonim operate even on a Daraisa level. The question is, when you see a mole in a human body, and even if you could tell me where the mole was, is that considered a Simon Movak, a grade A Simon? Meaning a Simon that is absolutely clear proof that this is that person. So the Gemara says that's a machlokas. Let's just finish quickly to the two dots. So the Gemara says now, in the argument that we made that simanim really are daraisa. So the Gemara says, let's go back to our Mishnah. What did our Mishnah say? Our Mishnah says that if there are signs on the body, that's not good. Why? Meaning, if you're subscribing to the idea that simanim are daraisa, so why not? So the Gemara says, gufa darach v'gutz. The Gemara says, no. In the Mishnah, when the Mishnah wasn't describing where you saw a mole, the Mishnah was describing, you know, it was a shorter body. It was a taller body. That's not enough information. That's not even a simon. B'kelev d'chayshin l'sha'ela. The Gemara says, and as far as clothing is concerned, okay, yeah, it's true that you did identify, you know, the clothing and that person wears that clothing, but the Gemara says, but people borrow clothing all the time. V'chayshin l'sha'ela. Let's pause now. I'm sorry, I want to get to two dots, but it's going to take a while to get to these next lines of Gemara. Okay, I don't want to go too much over. All right, we'll stop over here. Tomorrow we'll pick it up, the going over various simanim, and when we're worried about borrowing clothing, when we're not worried about borrowing clothing or items. Okay, and we'll finish up tomorrow.